Lunch with Leon is brought to you by Total Care, the UK experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Visit totalcare.co.uk and learn about their market-leading mobile column lifts, fixed post lifts, brake testers, inspection pits, and more. Total Care, lifting business one vehicle at a time.
Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon. In fact, this lunch started out as dinner because when I was at COP26, I found myself one night at dinner sat next to my friend Ian Constance, who's the Chief Executive Officer at the Advanced Propulsion Centre UK. We had such a great time chatting over dinner, he very kindly agreed to come over here and have lunch with us. So we started where we left off at dinner, about whether climate change is as serious as people say. The world established and noted historian David Starkey said that Greta Thunberg is a religious nutter. And actually, she's not really an environmentalist. She is, in fact, just campaigning because she's in love with the religion that's nature. So, I mean, I guess I was just wondering where you are on this. I mean, is she a religious nutter or is she somebody we should be listening to?
Wow. I don't think he cares about hate mail, but I imagine he must have got tons and tons of hate mail from that. But my view on Greta is, I mean, first of all, I think she's done a good job at getting more interest, momentum into this space and holding some of the politicians' feet to the fire and sort of saying, don't let up. And, you know, and she's got this big band of followers, mainly young people who are the sort of, well, the current and next sort of generation of voters. So these are the people that these politicians have got to play up to. So in that respect, you know, take your hat off to a young woman who stepped up and disrupted this a bit and disrupted this place. We need disruptors. We need innovators. And, you know, I mean, my thing is all about innovation, but generally in technology, but people who sort of disrupt in the sort of political world is a great thing. And so, and at her age, doing what she's done, you know, take my hat off to her. Yeah. I think though that, you know, what for me though, we've got to do a better job of educating some of the people out there about the things that are going on. You know, there is so much going on. The UK has the fastest decarbonisation of its electricity grid anywhere amongst the G7, probably amongst the G20, I would think. And, you know, because of all the funding we've invested into offshore wind and solar and all of those kind of things, that didn't start because people started protesting a few years ago. That's been an ongoing project for many, many years. And my own organization, the Advanced Propulsion Center, I mean, we started in 2013. We came out of a discussion which was happening between the automotive industry and government, which started in around the end of the big recession, sort of 2008, 2010, to put a billion quid, half of it from government, half of it from the industry, into developing innovative solutions for low carbon road transport. And you know, so these things have been going on for a long time and they're doing a lot of good. I mean, my organization, we've safeguarded, created about 40,000 jobs in that time. And we've delivered projects with the industrial partners have delivered the projects with our support that have saved around 200 million tons of carbon dioxide from our atmosphere. So this isn't about sort of theoretical projects. This is about getting products to the marketplace, supported by government, supported by industry, working collaboratively together with, you know, organizations like mine as a catalyst to help that happen. And you know, again, these things didn't just happen overnight. They're long-term projects with long-term support. And it would be good if people knew a bit more about those kind of things rather than just this narrative that nothing's happening and we've got to go fast. I think that's the first thing. And if I can, Leon, I spoke to my 14-year-old daughter, Hannah, last night, and she said, it was really interesting, 14 years old, she said, I think it's great what she's done, as I just said at the beginning. You know, she's kind of out there doing things and she's, you know, really made a difference. She said, but I she said, we had in our school assembly the other day, we had a couple of people come along to talk to us about environmental stuff. And she said they banged on about, you know, the ice caps melting and getting above 1.5 degrees and, you know, and all this bad stuff that's going to happen, she said, which we all know. We all know that. What we want is for people to sort of tell us what we got to do and how we're going to go forward now. All this sort of talk about, you know, it's all woe is me. It's not that helpful. So that's, I guess that's another perspective.
Well, it is, because it is interesting how Greta has touched young people. You know, I was in Bristol when she rocked up there, I think a couple of years ago, and broadly everybody under the age of about 21 turned up to see her. And I'm interested about the young people, because on the one hand, we want to believe, don't we, that to some extent we'll be delivered out of this by the generational factor, that some of the dinosaurs will just finish and leave, and young people will come into more senior positions, and therefore the rate of progress might be exponential. You'd like to think that. When I was talking to Anthony Smith on this show 3 or 4 weeks ago, he said of his children that they are environmentalists up to a point.
Yeah.
But for example, they won't go too far out of their way. So for example, of course they prefer in abstract an electric train because it's greener than a diesel train, but they're not going to wait and let the diesel train go to get the electric one. And indeed, even a zero emission electric train that's late is still a perishing nuisance. So they're sort of with the campaign. But there are limits to how far even the young people will go. And he thought that I was being too optimistic about the generational effect of old people like me being swept away and being replaced with new people.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting. I would say that's my experience as well. I've got three girls ranging between 19 and 14. And yes, I mean, they're all environmentally aware and they want to do the right thing, but you know, as you say, it comes with limits. And I was kind of interested yesterday, we were talking about rare materials, you know, nickel for batteries and lithium for batteries and rare earth metals for motors and things like this, and the fact that we've got to create a sustainable circular economy and in order to sort of make sure we don't just dig them all up all the time, you know, reuse. But the discussion quickly turned to one of, well, you know, and it's not just about reusing, you know, we've got to reduce the demand. So we've got to stop traveling. We've got to stop doing this. We've got to stop doing that. And I think that is personally, I think, you know, we shouldn't. First of all, we've got to stop waste. I accept that. But this idea that we're going to stop people from, you know, going on holiday to Lanzarote or flying there rather than walking or going by train. I mean, that's a bit rude of me, I know. But, you know, it's not going to happen. I mean, we live in democratic society where people have certain expectations and they want to travel, they want to get places, they want to do things. And this is where you come back round to this idea that fundamentally it's innovation around these modes of transport, around the things that we do and how we live, that are going to, in my view, deliver us from this issue. And as I say, where there's waste, people need to be more aware, need to eliminate it. But the idea that people can't travel, people can't go on holiday, people can't do this, people can't have a car because they need to be on the bus. It's not realistic. The interesting thing for me is it's not really realistic in a democratic society, but I don't think in an autocratic society, you know, like China. I think if they tried to do that, they would have mass riots on their hands. I think it's just not possible. It's not human nature.
No, Ian, and actually, of course, let's face it, being a democracy doesn't guarantee that you're green, because some of the non-democracies are consuming more coal and emitting more CO2 than all of the rest of us put together. So just democracy of itself doesn't have anything to be ashamed about, I think, in that respect.
And the one I heard the other day, I don't know if you saw this, one of the shortages coming up on the horizon now is copper, where the amount of copper that's required far outstrips our ability to create it. And I'd never thought of that. Obviously lithium and cobalt and stuff we've known about. And I see, Ian, you're making some predictions about battery prices, or energy prices, to be fair, based on battery density and the prices of materials. And the thrust I saw your message was about those are only achievable if there are some pretty long-term commitments on investment and so on to get the volumes steady.
Yeah, I mean, so the work that we do fundamentally, we work in two spaces, and that's research and development, late stage research and development to bring automotive innovation through to market. And I sort of mentioned that earlier. The other area we work is something called the Automotive Transformation Fund. And that's fundamentally building a new supply chain for that transitioned industry. So, you know, battery gigafactories, motors, power electronics, those things that are going to be the big value elements in the car, you know, as engines and gearboxes die down. So but our approach has been to look clearly at that first tier, that battery supply, but also look beyond that and say, okay, what are the big components going into those battery gigafactories? Because if we don't attract that value and we don't have that value created here in the UK, we're going to struggle to maintain and sustain those products economically. And what you quickly get to, Leon, is this this understanding that we, as you said, the precious metals, the nickels, the lithiums, and so on of this in the world. If we don't extract them or get a supply of them and secure a supply of them, we are going to have a supply and demand issue. So whilst the cost of these batteries may come down, the price might not, because of the cost of the supply and demand, the commodity cost of these raw materials going in. We are in quite a precarious situation, because that will run through the raw materials, the raw material processing, and the battery building. Because they're, if you look at all the predictions that are coming up, there's going to be a lot more demand at each stage of that than there is supply. These people who are predicting that we are pretty much at parity of an EV cost to an internal combustion engine, first of all, internal combustion engine, I don't agree with that, first of all, that we're there now. I think we could get there in the next few years, but it depends on us being able to bring the supply of all of those elements at the various stages of that supply chain. And that's a huge task.
Yeah. I tell you what I can't get my mind around as well. I can't get my mind around whether we will be helped along by the science of hydrogen as a fuel in an internal combustion engine, or indeed even ammonia as a fuel in an internal combustion engine. Because I can't get my mind around whether adapting existing internal combustion engine technology for zero emission type fuels is a helpful hybrid way of getting more done faster, or whether the politicians who've reduced this to the binary of internal combustion engine bad, electric good, because it's simple. And you were saying earlier, weren't you, about how much work we've got to do to help people understand, because it's fiendishly complicated. Do you think it's a time waster?
No, I don't. I think hydrogen's got a place in this story, very much so. I think that battery electric vehicles are going to form the sort of vast majority of on the road transport in cars and light vans, right? The sub 3.5 ton sort of cars and light vans, most of that will be battery electric. And that's where most cars are sold. So, most vehicles on the road are from a volume perspective. I think when you get above that, when you get into the sort of heavy duty, the medium and heavy duty sectors, you are going to see different needs coming in. So I think, you know, the mid-scale trucks, you know, the sort of 7 to 18 tonners, those kind of things, I think those can probably, there are many applications where a battery will probably work. But when you get into the 40-ton truck that's got to go from sort of Aberdeen to Belgrade or something, you know, and the whole economics of that truck is that you run it and you run it hard and you run it constantly with a full load if you can. You know, the idea that we're going to do that with batteries is not realistic at all, because first of all, you take up a load of the payload of the truck with the batteries, right? And of course, you carry that weight all the way. It's not like an internal combustion engine where you, as you use the diesel, the weight of the diesel sort of goes, right? I mean, those batteries are in it and the weight is there the whole time. And the size and the weight of them is there the whole time. But then you know, once, okay, we'll start in Aberdeen. By the time I get down to Luton, I've got to stop for 4 hours and fill up with electricity. And I've got to have the electricity on hand to do that, you know. So if, you know, a few of these trucks stopped in Toddington service station on the M1, you know, you'd have to switch off Luton, was what somebody told me, which is, you know, not a nice thought for the people who live in Luton. So you know, I don't think 40, those big heavy trucks doing long distances are going to work with batteries. So you need something else. So what are the solutions? You know, sustainable synthetic fuels or hydrogen. And you know, fundamentally with sustainable fuels, you need a feedstock to bring the carbon in. You get the hydrogen in the same way. They're very expensive. I think there are ways to reduce the cost of those sustainable fuels, but it requires a lot of investment. So, you know, so that's a bit of an open question. And I think, so if there's going to be a sort of limited amount of that, it's likely to go into aviation, into aeroplanes. So then you're stuck with what do you do with this, with these sort of heavier transport in the middle? And I think that's where hydrogen steps in. Now, will hydrogen go combustion route or a fuel cell route? Again, you know, I think that's a really open question. I would say at the moment it will be a bit of both. Whether that's truly where we end up longer term, I don't know. But I see a lot of people working on both, and we're supporting projects in both. So, you know, we're supporting a project with Cummins, who are doing a hydrogen combustion truck platform. We're supporting Wrightbus over in Northern Ireland. They're doing a bus, but that's a fuel cell bus on a really interesting project that they're getting close to commercialization. Lots of interest in that. So you know, I think there is a place for hydrogen. I think the whole question of the hydrogen cycle requiring, you know, a lot more energy in at the front end to what you get at the wheels of the vehicle is right. I mean, if you use electricity, you know, you're probably overall system, you're probably 80% plus efficient with hydrogen. Once you've the energy you put in at the start, you're probably, you know, 30%. But that's not really different from where we are today with internal combustion engines, is it? You know, 30 to 40% thermal efficiency. So I, you know, I think it will be horses for courses in the end.
Leon Daniels is talking to the Chief Executive Officer of the UK Advanced Propulsion Centre, Ian Constance. The Advanced Propulsion Centre supports the UK government in the drive towards net zero. Its unique relationship with the automotive industry and the political and academic landscape means collaboratively it drives the right commercial and strategic outcomes for the benefit of the UK. Its bridging position between the industry and the innovation means it can influence up and down the ecosystem, taking a science superpower to an industrial one.
Isn't it interesting? I come from a generation where, frankly, one solid internal combustion engine thing was suitable to be in a bus, coach, truck, ship, could run generators, could be used as an uninterruptible power supply. And it was broadly the same thing. And the calorific value of a gallon of diesel is pretty hard to beat.
Absolutely.
And going back to your point about education, people have been looking for the replacement holy grail. But what you and I think, of course, is there is no one solution now in the zero emission world. It's very much what works in car, what works in light goods, what works in heavy goods, what something else works in maritime, something else works in aviation, something else works in rail. We're not going to have that wonderful, simplistic period of an internal combustion engine with some modifications, because either its cycle was it was stopping and starting every 200 yards on a bus, or it was running at full speed for hours like it would be on a boat. All that's gone now, isn't it?
Oh, I totally. I mean that's right. And I think what's interesting about that observation, and you know, going back to what you just asked me, which was where do I think hydrogen is going to end up? The real development of these technologies depends on being able to bring the infrastructure on as well, right? I mean, we all accept that, you know, we very, very, very likely to be driving around in battery electric vehicles in the next 15 years or so. So that requires three things, doesn't it? It requires that consumers accept that and get their head around it and start to be able to afford it and all those kind of things. But it requires, the industry to step up and build the supply chains and make the product. But it requires the infrastructure to be there to charge those vehicles, right? And you know, that's a big area that if we don't step up and start putting the infrastructure in at pace, it's going to slow the whole thing. There's another area, like, talked about the battery supply chain a minute ago, and the next bit is infrastructure. But when you look at the different solutions that you mentioned, whether it's, you know, ammonia or hydrogen or something else, we've got to think about those infrastructure solutions and bring them on as well. Otherwise, that, you know, the ecosystem doesn't work. And as you said, that's what made hydrocarbons burning petrol and diesel so straightforward. It was a very clearly the right solution for the time. And the infrastructure grew up around it very quickly. Yeah. I mean, I think the ranges of these cars are getting better all the time. And I think two things. I think that the range will continue to grow. I think we'll sort of get to the 300 miles sort of real world range. The charging times have to come down so that you can really plug in for 10 minutes, have a cup of coffee and get going. I mean, if you have to stay there 45 minutes, it becomes, you know, tedious. And also you get this problem where you're blocking up the infrastructure. You're going to need, you know, miles of tons and tons of chargers. But you're right. I mean, the fundamental, how somebody talked about it as being the bank holiday Monday dilemma or something, which was, you know, if I start off from Cornwall on bank holiday Monday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I get to whatever it is, Taunton Services just outside Bristol on the M5, right? And today, if you go there on bank holiday Monday at 6 p.m., you can't get in the service station, even though they're all internal combustion engines, because so many people want to stop and have a pee and get a cup of coffee and fill up, right? So how is that going to work if you're blocking, if everybody needs 45 minutes to fill up their car to get home, right? So that's kind of those, and you're right, those are extreme situations. But of course, again, that's what we all expect, isn't it? So that's, you know, so you've got this retraining, re-educating, and making things convenient is really the work of the next few years.
I think so. And it's about behaviours. Have you got some other exciting projects on that people would be interested in? Because you're funding a whole range of exciting.
Yeah. So we're building out the supply chain now. So we're doing a lot of work on gigafactories. We've recently supported Ford in Halewood with their electric drive unit, which was a great, great story, great product, and great story for the UK. Ford need to make electric drive units for their products that they build in Europe. The Halewood transmission plant up in Liverpool makes manual transmissions. Well, you know, manual transmissions don't have a place in this post-transition to EV world. So the idea that we can now make electric drive units there, that's fantastic. And it's great, protects those jobs, and, you know, is a great value of exports and value add for the UK economy. So that's one that I'm particularly proud of. And I have connections way back at the beginning of my career to Halewood, so that kind of is nice as well. We've on the R&D side, we're doing a lot of things on batteries. We brought together one of our favorite sort of case studies and demonstrate the kind of work that we do is we brought together two big names in the industry. So Williams, the Formula One company, who have their sort of technology development and application wing, Williams Engineering. They came, we went to see them and we said, you're doing such great work on batteries and you're into Formula E and all of these kind of things. You know, why don't you think about industrializing them, making them at scale and providing them to the industry? And they said, look, we're an engineering company and we don't make things. You know, that's not our thing. That's not our bag. But, you know, we love to work with people who do that kind of thing. A few weeks later, we were at Unipart up in Coventry, Unipart Manufacturing, talking to the team there about their plans. And they said, we're making exhaust pipes here. We're making fuel rails for petrol engines. We're making fuel tanks, that kind of thing. You know, we're worried about where the future goes because we can see what's coming down the road at us. But we don't really have too much product development capability. So how do we get into this new thing? And we thought we came away from there thinking, well, hold on a minute. These guys do the engineering. These guys do the manufacturing. These guys are really good at manufacturing. These guys are really good at engineering. Put them together, and they're now in a project which has brought together a joint venture between the two of them to bring battery packs and battery pack manufacturing into the UK. They've worked with various companies in the UK to develop that approach. So you know that's another fantastic area. We work with the London Taxi Company. I know you're interested in that kind of transportation, and that's another great project. You know, the London, the LEVC, they built that new factory up in Coventry and brought that hybrid cab to market. And they said to us, you know, to make this business sustainable, we need to do more. And we could make this product into a van. And we supported them in bringing that to a van. So again, another great product that shows that we're transitioning the industry, we're building the supply chain, and we're doing all of those things.
So, Ian, thank you. This has been Ian Constance, my guest, having lunch today with me on Lunch with Leon. Ian is Chief Executive Officer at the Advanced Propulsion Centre. That's apcuk.co.uk. Please do look up on their website for all the latest exciting work that the Advanced Propulsion Centre is doing. If you're going online, also please check in at itthub.net. This is an ITT Hub production. Please go across to our website. You'll see all the latest news on our news channel, details of this and other podcasts. So all that's left for me to do now is once again to thank my guest, Ian Constance, from the Advanced Propulsion Centre.
Thanks, Leon. That was great.